This week is Parshas Vayigash, a very emotional parsha. Yosef reveals himself to his brothers. Ani Yosef ha'oid avi choy. In fact, he says it twice. Ani Yosef asher mechartim osi mitzrayim. Yosef reveals himself twice. Ani Yosef. Now, I saw an idea in the Pinimim. You know what the premium is? They still distribute from Cleveland. Rabbi Scheinman, is his name Scheinman?
Scheinbaum.
So I have at home an old volume. He's been doing this probably for 20 years. Every year he puts out a volume. Collects all of the premium from each week from the year, and I have an old volume, and he has there a var which made a very powerful impression on me. We know there's a famous Rashi here. Rashi on this pasuk, when Yosef reveals himself to his brothers, he quotes the Yalchut Shmoni, where it says, "Oy oy lanu miyoyim hadin, oy lanu miyoyim ha teichacha." Let me see if I can find it quickly. Vayigash elav Yaakov. Yosef reveals himself to his brothers. Okay, it's not here. But we know the famous Chazal Rashi, I think somewhere close in this parsha. I don't know where it is. Oy lanu, woe to us, miyoyim hadin, oy lanu miyoyim hatoychach. Woe to us, that what happened with Yosef and with his brothers is a mashal for what will happen to all of us, la'asalavo, at some point in time, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu will reveal himself to us, ani Hashem. It will become clear to us HaKadosh Baruch Hu's role in our lives, and we're going to be embarrassed. How could we have not seen the signs? How could we have not been better people and do Hashem's mitzvahs? Oy lanu miyoyim hadin, oy lanu miyoyim hatoychacha. Rabbi Shine, what's his name? Rabbi Shine? Rabbi Scheinbaum. He quotes, I don't remember who he quotes, he quotes someone to ask the question, why does the order first din and then toychacha? What's the significance of din and then nechal and bechla? Why does the Medrash use these two ideas of din and teichacha? And again, what is the order? So the answer to this question, let's go to the famous Chazal psukim in Sefer Shmuel, when David takes for himself Bathsheba, who at that point in time was somewhat married to Uriah Hachiti, and. Did Uriah Hachidi give his wife a get? Yes, no, Altanai, so on and so forth, Machlik Rashi and Tosfos. But still, Nosan Hanavi comes to David HaMelech in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and gives David a very harsh Musar, that what you've done, maybe technically it was permitted, but it was not in the spirit of the law, it was premature. And he doesn't openly give Musar to David, he gives Musar to David through a mashal. He tells David about a situation in society where there are two brothers. One brother is very, very wealthy, he has everything he can possibly want, and his other brother is very poor. All he has is a little sheep. And the brother that's very wealthy sees the little sheep, and he has a desire to eat from its meat, to take it for himself, and he takes it, and he slaughters it, and he has committed the crime of taking away from the poor brother, the person who has nothing, he took away from him the only thing that he has. And what a horrible thing, this rich person has nothing that he does not have, there's nothing that he cannot do, is he have to take away from the poor man the only little thing that he has in this world. So he says to David, David, how do you paskin on this halacha, this what this person has done? He stole a few dollars, but what is the halacha? So David says, that person is chayev misa. Chayiv Misa, this is a terrible travesty, terrible thing to take away from a person, the little that he has. Nosan Hanavi immediately turns to David and says to David, David, Atoha Ish, you're the person, you're the Ganef. You are identified with the rich man, you have everything you can possibly want, you have 18 wives, what is lacking? You have to go take away from Uriah Hachiti, the only thing that he has, his wife, the Shepsala. You have to take away Atah Ish, you're the one, you pass in your own halacha. David, so what was the Seder Hadvarim? This is a famous Chazal, this is a famous Mishmuz, everyone heard it at some point in time, that first David paskin the din, a din was presented to David HaMelech, David paskin the halacha, he was really passing on upon himself, and then Nosan gave him Teichacha, Atoho Ish. First comes the din, then comes the Teichacha. And this we've all heard from the Bali Musa at some point in time, that we are really doing this every single day. We have situations where we are judging others, and the truth is we're really really judging ourselves. The Bezin Shalmaila is not like we think. They're sitting in Shemayim. There's a Bezin of 70 Dayanim. They're watching our every move, and they're deciding if what we do is good or not good. We are the only judge. We are judging ourselves. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is bringing in front of us situations which we can relate to with crimes that we ourselves have committed, and the way we judge others is the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to judge us. We are really judging ourselves when we see different situations unfold before us. Okay, this I think we've all heard at some point in time. But what I've seen in the Pnim is that he takes this and he applies this directly to Yosef. What has happened here in the story of Yosef? Yosef, the brothers were accused of stealing a goblet. How much already does a goblet cost? You go to the palace, you're invited to a state dinner, and you take home a spoon. Okay, you take home out of the state dinner, you take home from a spoon, a cup, you take home. And then after you come home, you return back to Flatbush, you're sitting home, you knock on the door from the Secret Service that we suspect, we caught you on camera, we have a GPS tracker into every single little toothpick from the White House, and we know that you have it. They come and they search your house and they find in your house the goblet, a cup, a spoon, whatever, some property from the White House. Therefore, you know what? We're taking you back into the White House and you're going to be slaves forever. Not only you, your entire family, and so on and so forth. Or we're going to lock you up forever. How would you feel about this? What? You would tell that's your defense. We only took it home to entitle it. How would you feel about this? How do you feel? You would say this unjust. First of all, I didn't steal it. That's exactly what the brother said to Yosef. We didn't steal it. This was a conspiracy. Someone put it in our backpacks against our will. And even if you're right, even if we did steal it, the punishment does not fit the crime. What already did we steal? We stole your goblet. We don't deserve to suffer in this way. So Yosef, when he said to them, Ani Yosef, what he was basically saying, according to this idea, is I didn't deserve the punishment that you decided for me either. Just like you acknowledge at this moment in time that it's not fair to become a slave, to be sold, to be given over to slavery for stealing a goblet. You yourself acknowledge, are telling me, Vayigash Elav Yehuda, Chazal and Midrashim said that they were willing to destroy the entire Egypt. They were Giboyrim. They were willing to destroy the entire. Why? It's just not fair. Just because we stole a goblet, for stealing a little goblet, I have to be sold. Our brother Binyamin has to become a slave. What did I do to you? You paskin your own Shiloh. I told you a few little dreams. If you want, you can go a step further. You can say, what is the goblet? The goblet was to be menachish. What does it mean to be menachish? You saw the givia ha-kesef, asher nachish, shinachish, ish asher kamonu. What do you do with the givia ha-kesef? You look into the future. You look into the future, you're able to predict what's going to happen to the future. For stealing an object that tells you what's going to happen to the future, it's dvarm shaloi bala oilam. Dvarim shalei bala oilam. It's a cup. The cup is not worth anything, and the cup is only significant. They can tell you what's going to happen to the future. The future can change. It's not etched in stone. It's nonsense. It's dvarim shalei bala oilam. It's not fair to be sold as a slave. What did I do? I told you two dreams. I told you things about the future. Just like the Givia Kesef is something which tells you, reveals the future. I also revealed to you a dream. We were sitting together, and my stalks, your bundles, bow down to my bundles. We saw the stars, the moon, the sun. They bow down to me. Big deal. For that is a Kedai to be sold as an Eved. As an Eved. Atohoish, you yourself paskin your own shalom. When Yosef said to him, Ani Yosef, this is exactly what happened when Nosan Hanavi came to David HaMelech. Nosan Hanavi presented to David HaMelech a mashal, and David HaMelech paskined, and Nosan said, Atohoish, this entire thing that I've done before you is all to reenact what happened between me and you. I predicted the future, and you got all worked up about my future predictions, and you sold me as a slave. Is that right? Does the punishment, does it fit the crime of revealing something unpleasant about the future? Look at yourself. Over here, you stole the Gviya Kesev, which predicts the future, and you yourself acknowledge that it's nonsense. The future has not yet happened, always can change. And you yourself were willing to destroy the entire Egypt. You yourself paskin the halacha yourself, and therefore it's certainly unjust what you have done to me. Atah ish, and that is why ki nifhalu mi panav, and now we have a much greater appreciation of the words of the Medrash, oy lanu miyoyim hadin, oy lanu liyoyim hatoychacha. Here is the din, you paskin the din, and therefore we're going to turn the din upon you. It is a toychacha to you for what you yourself have decided. Okay, let's go to another idea. Let's jump ahead a few psukim. Yosef reveals himself to his brothers and he tells them, I want you to go back to my father and I want you to tell him about all of my honor and I want you and give you wagons and food and so on and so forth, and I want you to come back and bring my father. Yosef is very specific. He is very demanding in what he wants them to do. Let me read you some of the psukim. V'yatem shlachtem osi. Fine. Maharu v'alu elavi. Quickly, go back to my father. V'amartem, tell him the whole story. And it says, Rido elai al ta'amot. Come down to me and don't stand here. Do not remain stationary. V'yoshavta, I'm going to put you by Eretz Goshen. He's very specific. V'chilkalti yoscha, I'm going to support you. There are 5 more years. And so on and so forth. Okay. Then he finally sends them off. Now, if you were writing the pasuk, how would you describe Yosef sending off his brothers? We would probably say Vayishlach es echav vayelechu. That's what I would probably write. Right? I wouldn't write anything. I can't even read. Vayishlach es echav vayelechu. He sends off his brothers. That's not what it says. It says Vayishlach. Okay, this is a good word to catch the Balkari. They probably do. Vayishalach es echav vayelechu. What is the difference between vayishlach and vayishalach? The word vayishalach is used in Parshas Noach in reference to the Oireth and the Yonah. Vayishalach es hayonah. Rashi there says vayishalach means he sent the Yonah to go forever. Go. I'm not telling you to come back. Let me try first. I can quickly find the pasuk in Parashas Noach. Read you the words of Rashi. Vayishalach es hayona. What parak is it? Ches? 8-8. Vayishalach, how do you know? Vayishalach es hayona me'ito. Look at Rashi. Vayishalach ein ze loshon shlichus. Elo loshon shloach. Sholcho loleches ledarka. Uvizoyira im kolu hamayim. Shim timsa, if it will find Manoach, loitosho veilov, it will not come back. The word vayishalach has a connotation, go. Go, and you don't have to come back. If the word would have been vayishlach, I'm sending you on a mission. Go on the mission, and there's a halacha. Shliach, there's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch that the shliach is required to return to the mishaleach to tell him I've done the mission. But here, I'm not telling you to do that. Hashem, the Yonah, he's not telling the Yonah to return. He's just sending the Yonah off for good. If you don't want to come back, Adrabah, don't come back. Well, here we learn the godless of Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef HaTzadik is telling his brothers, there are no strings attached. I'm not coming to you. He was extremely sensitive to the situation. His brothers, obviously, what Rashi tells us, were extremely ashamed when it was revealed to them, the entire, everything that happened. And Yosef is saying, don't worry, I'm not going to be harmful to you. I'm not going to impose my will upon you. I'm only here for your benefit. There's going to be 5 more years of famine. I'm willing to support you, to give you a land there in Goshen, for you and my father. Please, I beg you, take me up on the offer. But if you don't want, I understand. I understand you can go back home. I'll fill up your sacks with food. I'll give you enough what to eat, and you can go back home, and you can distance yourself from me and stay away from me if that's what you prefer. This is a tremendous godless of Yaakov, of Yosef Avinu. He was sensitive to their tsar and did not control them. Yosef was the shalit b'chol aretz. He was a moishal. He was an af, a moishal. The Torah used for Yosef every expression possible. An af, a paro, an odon, for the base paro, a moishal. Moishal means that he's in control. No one can say no to Yosef. Whatever Yosef says, you have no choice but to listen. But to his own brothers, he did not use the word vayishlach, he used the word vayishalach, which has the connotation, I'm here for you, but I'm not going to force you to do anything. If you want, you can go back home, even though I've given you all of my requests and my goodwill. And this again, I think, is something which is a very great godless on the part of Yosef HaTzadik. Okay, let's go to another idea. We have here Yehuda Shalach Lufan of Goishna. After Yaakov realizes that Yosef is alive, he sends Yehuda to Goishna to establish a yeshiva, Rashi says, in the Beis Medrash, a place of Hoira. The question is, why did he send Yehuda, why didn't he send either Levi or Yisachar? Famous question. So I saw a number of interesting answers. Answer number one is that Yehuda, this is from the Biala Rebbe. Everyone hear the Biala Rebbe?
Yeah.
So the Biala Rebbe says because Yehuda from all of the Shvatim, he says an incredible Chiddush, had the best Midos. Midos Toivos. Derech Eretz Kodmo LaTorah. Derech Eretz doesn't, why? How do we know that? Yehuda was the one that said Tzadka Mimeni. In his dealings with Tamar, he was willing to confess his sins. He was mevaz himself in front of the entire world. Tzadka Mimeni. That was a revelation of a true character. In order to establish a yeshiva, the most important thing is Derech Eretz Kadmo LaTorah. Levi may be the biggest Talmud Chacham, and maybe he'll be the Rosh Shiva. Yisachar may be, all the Magid Yeshiva will be from the Shevet of Yisachar. But the one who will serve as a foundation to the yeshiva is a person who has the Midos Tovos. If you come into an institution where there is no Midos Tovos, you should run as fast as you possibly can. They may be the most brilliant Talmidei Chachamim, but if there's no Midos, it will ultimately not succeed. That's what the Biala Rebbe says we learned from Yaakov. Yehuda Shalach Lefanav, not Levi, not Yisachar, because Midos is the foundation of any Jewish institution, of any higher institution of education. That's one Mahalach. Another Mahalach, Yehuda, what? Yehuda was the Baal Midos Tovos. Yehuda was the one who said Tzadka Mimeni. So he established the yeshiva. He was the one that was going to establish, lay out the foundation for the yeshiva. Okay, another idea from the Munkacher Rebbe. The Munkacher Rebbe says the reason why his question is a little bit different. Why was it necessary for Yehuda to establish a yeshiva? Why couldn't Yaakov send a message to Yosef that you, Yosef, with all of your connections, you should establish a yeshiva? So the answer is because Yehuda, it's a little sapikos, but it's Yehuda was the melech. Yehuda was destined for Malchus. Yosef was only a Mishnah Lemelech. And when it comes to a yeshiva, you don't settle for anything other than the best. You have to have Malchus and not a Mishnah Lemelech. A cute little var from the Munkacher Rebbe. A third idea, which is a poshet, and unfortunately this is a kitrek. I don't mean to be a kitrek, but it's a sad var because it's not the way the world works today. There's always what's ideal and what's practical is that Levi and Yisachar, their talents don't lie in fundraising. Their koichos are in learning. Levi and Yisachar, they're meant to be Rosh Yeshiva. They're not meant to be collectors. Yehuda was not from those who excelled in learning. That's the way it was. I mean, it was tremendous Talmud Chacham, obviously, but he was not Levi, was not Yisachar. Yehuda was Malchus. Yehuda was the fundraiser. A yeshiva, when it comes to the fundraising of the yeshiva, it's not proper to be matriach, the Rosh Yeshiva, for them to waste their time, not a waste of time, but to be oisek in the fundraising. It's very great milah with the balabatim. They're the ones who take care of all of the financial needs of the yeshiva, to give the Rosh Yeshiva the time to do what they're supposed to be doing. Unfortunately, that's not the way the world works today. Anyone that becomes a Rosh Yeshiva today, life is over. Learning is out the window, and they spend the rest of their lives being oisek in fundraising. And that is something which Yaakov Avinu in this week's parasha is telling us is dead wrong. It's dead wrong. Again, like we said, unfortunately, there are certain things which are ideal. What?
The Gaonim, supposedly the title of Gaon means you go and raise funds.
Could be, this is something because they had no choice. Okay, they had no choice. They had no choice, and it's a very sorry thing. Someone told me about
you have to have star power.
We all know there's a yeshiva called Chaim Berlin, and on the name of the building is the person Ben Tzion Eliyahu Fruchtenler.
Sure.
Now I don't know. I don't think I see my own eyes, and what I'm about to tell you is not true today anymore. It's not true today anymore. But his great grandchild told me this, and I've heard this from other people as well. Is that Ben Tzion Eliyahu Fruchtenler, when he got was very became when he developed a relationship with Rav Huttner, he told Rav Huttner, you do not get involved in the fundraising. That's what I'm going to take. If I just want you to be oisek in learning Yom V'Layla, you work with the Talmidim, you devote your karchos to Torah. The money, the fundraising, that's my problem. And that is what the family, they praise this individual who, that was a godless, that was unprecedented at the time. No, and unfortunately, I don't see today the same thing. I see today the Rosh Yeshivas are sent, it's not Chaim Berlin is not as bad as other yeshivas, but you definitely see Rosh Yeshiva are very much involved in fundraising today. But going back, and this is probably 60, 70 years ago, it was a different world, and that was viewed by the family, it's a legacy in the family, it's such a godless for a balabas, to say to Rosh Yeshiva, you don't worry, that is our role, and you sit and learn. That's Mamash says here in the Pasuk of Yehuda Shalach Lefan of Goyishna. The only Musar Haskel from this is that when someone does come collecting, we should have a little more Rachmanis upon them than rub it into them and say, Nebuch, this is what you have to do to go make a parnasa. It's not a very pleasant thing. Okay, now there is one other var which made another impression. I saw this also in the Pinimim, and he brings this from Rav Chanoch Aaron Held. If I'm pronouncing his name correctly, why was it necessary for Yehuda, for Yaakov to establish a yeshiva before he arrived? Yaakov Avinu L'chor was a hands-on person. L'chor, he would want to be very involved in the establishing of the yeshiva. He'll come down to Mitzrayim, he'll check out the territory, he'll check out the real estate, he'll buy a building in the right location. Location is everything. He'll set up the yeshiva, you know, he'll see the blueprints, and he'll be hands-on, he'll set up the yeshiva the way he wants, he'll micromanage the yeshiva from the grassroots. Yet, he says, no, let Yehuda go, let Yehuda establish yeshiva before my family, myself, my 70 children, my grandchildren, they totally come down. What is the pshat? So Rabbi Chanoch Aaron Held connects this to the sugi of Batei Orei Choyma. We know in Parshas Bos Pichu Kosai, Bahar, Parshas Bahar, we learn about different types of cities. There's a city called on Batei homes in an Orei Choyma, and there are homes in that are not Orei Choyma, Batei Hachatzeros. And the Gemara elaborates upon the Torah that describes different halachas. And the basic yisod is that a city that has a wall around it is a fortified city. This is a strong city. The people who settle there are secure. Ancient times, there was a lot of danger. There's still more danger today, but it was a different type of danger. And if you're living in a walled city, you are protected. And the Torah has different halachas for walled cities and not walled cities. The Gemara says just because you live in a walled city doesn't necessarily mean you're given all the rules of a walled city. Doesn't necessarily mean you're given the advantages and disadvantages. If the order to be categorized as a walled city, the wall must come before the people. If you move into a city that there is no wall, and then the people decide, you know what, we're going to build a wall around the city, it does not have in halacha the status of Batei Orei Choyma. Why not? Because the people, if they were willing to settle in this city without a wall, it goes to show they don't rely upon the wall. If originally we were willing to sell, to buy property, real estate, and sell in the city, so we were to feel secure in our own koyach. We don't need the koyach of the wall. Okay, the situation is different. The life is different, the people are nervous. Okay, so we put up a wall. Putting up a wall after you move in, it's too little, too late. You've already shown, you've already revealed that you feel secure in your own koyach. The wall is a good thing, but I'm a gibor, I don't need the wall. The same thing is true when it comes to, this is Rabbi Aaron Chanoch Aaron Held says, when it comes to Yehuda and Yaakov setting up a yeshiva. If Yaakov Avinu would come with his family and settle in Mitzrayim, the impression he would send to his family is, this living in Egypt, we don't. It's not begeder bate arichayma. We are secure in ourselves. We don't need the Torah to protect us. We have a legacy. We are Bnei Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. That alone will be for us a shmira, will be for us a protection from the non-Jewish society. Yaakov Avinu said, no, when you're coming down to Eretz Yisrael, it has to be Begeder, Batei Arichama. The wall comes first. What is the ultimate wall, shmir for Klal Yisrael? Torah. The ultimate shmir for Klal Yisrael are people that are learning Torah. When there is a yeshivos, there is education. This is the choyma for Klal Yisrael. If the choyma comes first, and then the people settle second, that is in halacha, is considered you're in a batei arichayma. Because it shows, because you first come to settle in a city that already has a wall, you have revealed that I'm relying upon the wall for my protection. I'm not relying upon myself for shmira. If the yeshiva will come before I arrive, and we will move into a makam where already is established a yeshiva, it is a revelation, we're only coming to Mitzrayim, because in the emunah, the Torah will protect us. And when you live with such a belief, the Torah will protect you, indeed you will be safe. If we'll first settle in the land, in the golden Medina, and we'll be okay. That is a statement. I don't need any Torah. Oh, okay, then we have to go and have some Jewish education also, but that's a revelation. You may have the best institutions later on, but because you came before the Torah, you have revealed that the Torah is not really what protects you. What protects you are your own zuchusim, and that is tragic. And that is a very great mistake, and that can lead to a very great danger. So that's
logical to build a wall around a city if nobody's living there in advance.
No, but it's a matter of attitude. It's a matter of attitude. We're planning on moving into the city. Before we move into the city, we're going to build a wall. So when the people who will move in, there'll be an incentive. You can come and live in the city, you'll be protected. I'm only...
Finally, they built a wall before they came.
Yushalayim, yeah, Yushalayim, before we, at least we conquered it, before it was given to Yevusi. Okay, that's a different story. But
it's a planned city. You planned the city.
When you, what is the incentive to move into this city? There's shmira, there's protection. So when you move into the city, you have revealed, I'm only coming to live here because it's protected. If there is no wall in the city and you move in first, it shows, I don't need protection, I can take care of myself. Now you want to build a wall? Okay, so you can build a wall. But that's not the ikar. Same thing. When you come into Mitzrayim, into a foreign land, what is going to protect you? If you're going to first settle and then build a Torah institution, you've made a statement, you'll be living for the rest of your life within the mindset, I don't need the Torah to protect me, I can protect myself. But if you come into a place where there already is Torah established, when you come to settle, you recognize, I'm settling here only in the Zechus of Torah, it's going to protect me. It's a very powerful idea. Okay, let's go to another. So we have really, those who just review, we have really, I think four different ideas of Goyishna. We have the idea of Yehuda, Shalach, Lefan of Goyishna, Yehuda and not Levi and Yisachar. Yehuda, the fundraiser, should do the fundraising. The Melech should be the one, not the Mishnah Lemelech. And the one that has the best midos is the one that established the yeshiva. And the fourth idea is the Choyma has to come before the Yishuv of the Adam.
By the way, Goshna, the letters Nun Gimel
Hei Shin. Nes Gadol Hayasham. Neis Gadol Hayasham, and then when it says that they settled, they only settled in Goshen. So I'll tell you a little drush. Yes, Yehuda Shalach Lefan of Goshna. Goshna Neis Gadol Hayasham. There was a great miracle in Mitzrayim, the fact that they survived. But when it said the end of the parasha, Vayeshev Yisrael Be'eretz Goshen, what happened to the hay? Hoya. Terence says it wasn't only, it's not in the past. The very existence in the present, they recognized was a miracle. It wasn't just, okay, they have to develop that a little bit more. Okay, let's go to another idea. Okay, this is a cute little idea. Yaakov Avinu, Yosef sends to his father, Mituv Eretz Mitzrayim. There are two things in this parish that are called the Tuv Eretz Mitzrayim. The gift, and the land. Goshen, Yosef says, settle in the Tuv. Paro says, I'm going to give you from the Tuv Haaretz, the best of the land. Eretz Goshen. What's the connection between these two part, these two things that are both called the Tuv, the best? So let's go back to Yosef. Yosef sent his father a gift. Rashi tells us, what did he send his father? One of two things. Either Yayin Yoshan, Shadas Zekenim Noicha Hinenu, which some of the Mepharshim explained to me that we don't appreciate what this means, is that it was the custom in ancient times, we learn this from the Megillah, to give a person wine that's older than his age. If a person is 30 years old, so you serve him wine that's 31 years old. If the wine is older than you, somehow, I don't think we appreciate what this means, you enjoy it. You enjoy something. It seems that in Eretz Yisrael, according to the Medrash, in Eretz Yisrael, there's no such thing as wine that's older than 70 years old. Every 70 years old in Eretz Canaan, the wine spoils. It's not possible. That's what it says in the Medrash. Because I don't know whatever the reasons are. The agriculture does not allow for wine to remain more than after 70 years. But in Mitzrayim, where it never rains, so the air is controlled. There's no humidity. It's possible for wine to last for hundreds of years and not spoil. So Yaakov was at this point in time 130 years old. So in Eretz Canaan, the oldest one was 70 years old. So Yaakov was unable to enjoy good wine in Eretz Yisrael. That's why they had to bring wine from Eretz Mitzrayim, where wine can last more than 70 years. It's Yayin Yoshen Shadaz Zekenim Noichaimen. Okay, that's the pshat. Rashi then goes on to say another pshat. He gave him Pol Gerisin, beans. Now, doesn't this sound strange? If you go to pomegranate and you can buy anything you can possibly want, assuming you have the money to buy what you want, what would you buy? I bought beans. Is that really what you would buy? I would buy, what's going on over here? Pol Gerisin is what Yaakov Yosef sent his father. My high. This is even stranger than sending the agolos. Agolos filled with beans. What is all that? Yes, I saw it. I saw somewhere. I don't remember where I saw this. A very nice idea. We have Eretz Yisrael is praised as the land of the Shivas. I mean, Eretz Chita, Usoira, Zeshem, Udvash, all various. The Shivas Aminim is the land of the praised. So Chazal say, really, that's the whole Eretz Yisrael. It's all about Gashmias. It's about some good olives, some grapes, some figs. Come on, is that what it's all about? So Chazal said, you're right, that's not what it means. When it's the Shevach of the land is the Torah's Eretz. Uzahav, Eretz, Ahi, Toiva. It's the Ein Torah, Ketoras, Eretz Yisrael. All of these fruits allude to different halachic concepts, shiurim in the Torah. Zayis, loiv, shiurim, kizaisim. How much are you mechuyev to eat on Pesach? A kizayis. The shiurim to eating of things that are not kosher, the shiur is a kizayis. When it says a dried fig, that's for Yom HaKippurim. On Yom HaKippurim, the shiur is in order to be satisfied. And so on and so on. The Gemara goes through every single one of the fruits of Eretz Yisrael alludes to another halacha in Shulchan Aruch that we need for to define the Shiurim in the Torah. So if that's the logic of the fruits, the best of Eretz Yisrael, we have a right to assume the same thing is true when it comes to Mitzrayim. If Yaakov Avinu sent beans, Pol Gerisin, it must be that Yaakov Avinu is alluding to a halacha that we can use as Mitzrayim for praise. What is the greatness of Mitzrayim? It has beans. Is that the greatness? Well, in Eretz Yisrael, what is its greatness? The Shivas Aminim. And the Shivas Aminim are shiurim for halachic concepts. Mitzrayim has also a halachic concept, a bean. Where is the only place in Shulchan Aruch we find the shiur of a bean? In the laws of Nida. The laws of Hilchos Nida. What is Eretz Mitzrayim described as in the Torah and by Chazal? The Ervas Haaretz. The greatest problem they faced in Egypt was they were Shetufei Zima, Gili Arayos. The concept of Nida is a concept which relates to Gili Arayos, Precious. A person has to distance himself from a woman that is not permitted, even his own wife. If a person is mechuyev to distance himself from his own wife, al achas kama v'kama, he has to distance himself from another man's wife. Kol Gleason, if a woman has on an aid on her inspection cloth dam that is the size of a pole gris, then that means that she is a nida. We no longer can assume that this came from a mosquito or some type of a worm, whatever it is, a worm or some type of little creature. This is the code. This pole gleason is the shear that is used in Hilchos Nida. Therefore, being that Eretz Mitzrayim was well known by Yaakov Avinu and by his children as being what is called the Ervas Haaretz, a land of Shittur Fezima, the first thing that Yaakov Avinu was worried about when he heard that Od Yosef Chai, Yosef is still alive, is maybe Chas V'Shalom, he was Nichshol in Arayis. And indeed, this was the Nisayon of Yosef HaTzadik, Eishes Potifa. This was the Nisayon that HaKadosh Baruch Hu challenged him with. And he was Vayonas Vayetze HaChutza. Yaakov Avinu, he said, listen, we live in Mitzrayim, this is the Nisayon of Mitzrayim. Every land has its Nisayonas. Some lands have a problem with Gilead, with Avodah Zar. Some lands have a problem with Gezel. Some lands have a problem with Shrichas Dam. Every land has its Nisayonas. Mitzrayim, the Nisayon is Arayos. But I was Oymed, and if that's the Nisayon, if here you can excel, you can be Oymed al Nisayon, then you can reach Madregos and Ruchnius that it cannot be achieved anywhere else in the world. This is the Shevach of Mitzrayim. In Eretz Yisrael, you don't have the same Yetzirah. Don't worry, there's the Yetzirah in Eretz Yisrael also. Let's not kid ourselves. But not like in Mitzrayim. In Mitzrayim, it's the Ervas Haaretz. Nimela, this is the Shevach of Eretz Mitzrayim, more so than Eretz Yisrael. Eretz only has the Shevach Haminim. Eretz Yisrael doesn't have the Pol Grisin, because the Pol Grisin is the shear of Nida, which Nida captures the essence of Gilead Arayis. And Mitzrayim is the land where you need to overcome this Nisayon. And I was able to overcome the Nisayon. And not only that, I'm going to send you to Eretz Goshen. Eretz Goshen was a land that was set apart. And going a step further, what was Eretz Goshen? Chazal tell us that who really owned Eretz Goshen? Sarimenu. And when did Sarimenu receive Eretz Goshen? When Paro tried to be Nichshol with her in India, Gilead Arayis, and she overcame. Don't. And what was the reward for the Parisha in not being Nichshol in Arayis? The reward was Eretz Goshen. Eretz Goshen was a reminder of to stay away, to be a part specifically in an inyan of Arayos. So there is a relationship between the Tuv Mitzrayim, which is Yayin Yashan and Pol Shel Grisin, and the part of the land that is called Goshen, which is also called the Tuv Mitzrayim, because it is a section of the land that represents the Nitzachon over the Yetzirah of Gilead Arayis, and that's where Klal Yisrael will stay, and that's where they will survive and thrive. Okay, let's go to this idea is part mine and part someone else. Who is the someone else? Mystery. I don't remember. So I think I try to embellish it. I try to embellish it a little bit. Like I always say, I told you the story that the Rav, one of the Balabatim, caught the Rav passing off a drasha as his own, and he accused the Rav of plagiarism, and the Rav said to the Balabas, "Hagoynif min haganof potter." I don't chashol mean to say a lot of the ideas, you know, they circulate among, maybe it was the beer, maybe I think it possibly could be the Birchas Peretz. Peretz Steinberg, the young Israel of Queens Valley. I think I saw the root of the idea in his sefer. This idea of the pull grisin. The pull grisin is the shevach of Mitzrayim, equivalent to the shevach of Eretz Yisrael of the Zayin meaning. Okay, let's go to another idea, which is let me just see what I'm saying over here. Okay, interesting question. I don't have a good answer. Some of these ideas are half-baked ideas. The beginning of the parasha is a great question. The question is much better than the answer. Something to think about. We go to parashas. The question really touches upon how to learn Chumash. When you read a pasuk in Chumash, the question is how do we understand what the pasuk means? The beginning of the parasha begins with Yehuda complaining. The second pasuk of the parasha. Adoni Sho'al, my master, you, Yosef, in the skies, have asked me, or have asked, Es Avodov Lemar, Hayesh Lochem of O'och. Do you have a father or a brother? So we all take this for granted. We probably heard this pasuk been read 100 times, 1,000 times, Monday, Thursday, Shabbos, Mincha, and every... Really? My master has asked his servants, do you have a father or a brother? Show me where. Where in the Torah do we find Yosef asking his brothers, do you have a father? Do you have a brother? Doesn't say it anywhere. Go back in Parshas Miketz. Go through it very carefully. You will not discover anywhere this question being asked to Yosef's brothers. The only place, that's the question. I didn't see a good answer. I don't have a good answer. But the only answer I can give, we can work with, is in the very beginning of Parshas, in Parshas Miketz, when he meets his brothers for the very first time, Vayar Yosef es Echo Vayakirem, and he recognizes them, Vayisnaker Alehem, and he treats them coolly, he acts coolly upon them, Vayidaber Itom Koshois, and he speaks to them, with them, harshly.
Cautious. From each different day. So they all played back the same story. With Jacob
Kobowitz's,
and our father sent us
down. Vayidaber itam cautious. Then it goes on to say, Vayomer alehem, may ayin bosem, from where do you come? Vayomu mi eretz kanan lishba oichal. The only place we can suggest that Yaakov Avinu, the only conversation, you go through the psukim very carefully, where we can suggest where this question came up, is in these words, Vayidaber Itam Koshai. So if you want to give a very simple answer, you can say that the Torah doesn't have to tell us every little detail. That's what I said. The Torah records an event. You asked us, do we have a father or a brother? The Torah doesn't have to tell us where that took place. It's a fact. At some point in time in our conversation, not every conversation is recorded in the Torah, at some point in time this question was asked. That's one valid approach to understanding how to read a Pasuk in Chumash. Or maybe you can say that no, if the Torah says something later on that this question was asked, it has to be that this question, this statement was recorded earlier somewhere in Chumash. These are two... What? They
told them there were 12, right? Pasuk in Gimon.
But where was the question asked? They told him, they revealed, Adoni Sho'al. Sho'al. Our master has asked us where. Where do we find asking means Yosef is speaking, is asking questions to the brothers. Those things that you're referring to is where they're talking. They're not being asked. Show me a more specific pasuk where Yaakov, where we can say it is here where Yosef asked the question. I believe the only place you can find a hint is in the words here, Vayidaber itam koshois. He spoke to them harshly, and then Vayomer, a new statement, where do you come from? If the pasuk would have not have said where do you come from, we would have assumed that Vayidaber itam koshos, that's included in where do you come from. Part of the interrogation of speaking to them harshly would be, where do you come from? Where do you live? Isn't that part of the interrogation? Show me your passport. Let's see what's going on. But the pasuk yet breaks it up into two different sections. Vayidaber itam koshos. What exactly was koshos? We don't know. And then it says, Vayomer lohem, me'ayin basem. Where do you come from? Which land do you come from? Perhaps we can suggest that the Torah says, Adoni shol es avodav lemar hayeshchem avoach. That's koshos. Vayidaber itam koshos. And what is the pasuk teaching us? It's none of your business to ask someone about their family. Think about it. Yaakov Avinu, we learn this idea when we go with Avram Avinu and Sarah. When the Avram Avinu, Sarah comes down to Paro, comes to Avimelech, he says, who is this woman? And what does Avram Avinu later criticize Avimelech? Rak in Yiras Elokim Bamokim Hazeh. And Rashi says, when a person comes to a new city, is it Derech Eretz to ask about his wife? Who is this woman? Is it their heritage to ask about your family? Who is this woman? When you're a guest in the city, the first thing you ask, do you have a place to eat? Do you have a place to sleep? That's their heritage. To start asking about family is not derech eretz. Now there you'll tell me, women. There you'll say, a paro, looking at a woman, who is this woman? Is it your wife? Is it your sister? Okay, in a chanami. But on a simpler level, you can say, it's a question of family. when you come, when over here we were 12, we came down here, we, how many? There were nine who came down, nine brothers came down to Egypt. They left. 10, they left behind the 10, they left behind Binyamin and Yosef was here in disguise. They come down. What's the first thing we expect you to ask us when we come down? We expect you to ask, Me'ayin Bosem? Where do you come from? Do you need food? Do you have what to eat? What's doing in Canaan? Are people starving? Well, what's going on? Are people sick? The first thing is, Koshos. You spoke to us harshly. It's a very powerful word, Koshos. You made us uncomfortable. What? How did you make us uncomfortable? The Torah doesn't say. But in this week's parasha, we learn Yehuda is bitter. And he says, we came here, and the first thing you ask us, Adoni Shoal, Hayesh Lechem Avoch. Now, if not for the word Koshos, I'm ignorant. I wouldn't, okay, so it's a nice thing you go on a date with a girl. So you talk about family. You talk about who your brothers, your sisters, your father, your relatives. You talk about the weather. What? We talk about these things. The Torah here is revealing to us that this idea is correct. If this idea is correct, maybe when you go on a date it's different, because maybe then you do have a right to ask those questions. But when a guest comes, how much money? What do the parents do, right? But the question here is, the question over here is, you learn the, perhaps, again, this is just the theory. But got to connect the dots.
Yeah.
The question is, what? That's later. Later he says that, the Meraglim Atem. That only comes in later on. Vayakar, he cautious. First he says, there are two different statements. First, cautious. That's an independent statement. He speaks to them harshly. Then he says, Vayomer Aleihem, a whole new conversation. Me'ayin Bosem, where do you come from? Then he goes on to say, no, your spies. You would think that's the koshos. To accuse a person of being a spy, that's koshos. But if it would say koshos after accusing them of being meraglim, then you can say that the koshos goes on being meraglim. But it says koshos at the very beginning. The first thing is koshos. Then he says, me'ayin basim, where do you come from? Then he first accused them of being spies.
This is interrogation. The first thing you do is you hit him with a tough question. You say, uh-huh, and you catch him, and then you know, you see, you're a spy. That's interrogation. That's
okay, but if we connect the dots, we can perhaps suggest that the koshos is referring to the question, do you have a father? Do you have a brother? And the Torah is revealing to us that when you meet a person, and it makes sense, we're just not, unfortunately, we live in a world where we're not sensitive to many things, but if you do think about it, it's not a nice thing to ask. When you come into a new environment, the first thing, when you make conversation, it's not proper right away to know and to dig into your family history. I want to know your family history, I want to know everything about you, how old you are, and what you do. You know, there's a time for everything. The first thing is not to say, you have a father? You have a brother? What's in your business? We're not here to reveal our family. This is called koshos. And it's a limud musar for us that when we come in contact with people that we have for the very first time, be very careful in how you introduce yourself to someone. I know someone in yeshiva, someone lost his school. He was a Baal Tshuva. He is a Baal Tshuva. I know he's a Baal Tshuva. And someone said to him, I was talking to him and he saw that he has an accent. And so the first thing he says to him, are you a Baal Tshuva? So that's not a nice. That's not a nice thing to do.
Why don't you say to us, you started off the prep
yeah.
of your Torah saying this is not. You don't have a real answer for the Shabbat.
It's a very big chiddush to say what I'm saying. I feel there's something here. The question is a great question. I think it's a great question. We never had. This question is also a very good question. What? What does that mean? He spoke to us harshly. Normally there'll be a medrash, there'll be a rashi, there'll be some insight. What did he say? So if you would not have anything else, you would say he accused them of being spies. He accused them. He wanted to know what's doing in this, they're in their homeland. Tell me about what's going on at home. But all of these things are spelled out later in the conversation. Me'ayin basem, meraglim atem, liros eras haaretz. He did all of these things later on. So what then does it mean in the beginning of the parasha koshos? Well, if you connect the dots, we know there was a question asked: do you have a father? Do you have a brother? It's very logical that that is the koshos. Why is that called koshos? Because it's not the right thing you say to a person. It's not a question that you expect to be asked when you first arrive in a new place. When you come to the passport control, the first thing the first person asks you, do you have a father? Do you have a brother? That's not what you like to hear. In fact, they're trained. You ever go in the airport, they're trained. Welcome to America. Welcome to this country. There's a certain protocol. There's a certain nimus. There are charetz. This is called kashos. And the limit hamusa for us is to be very sensitive.
The tone of voice that he used by
the
show.
The tone of voice.
To say if that was one of the questions, do you have a father? It was the tone because he wasn't really. It was a rhetorical question. Says you. I mean, I know the story. Is your reaction? You guys have a father, and you're letting him swing in the wind, twist in the wind, the way you are for these 22 years. You're telling me this story. I know, you know, because he knew himself. So it was a reactive question, not a real question. It was rhetorical. Do you have a father?
But that's a tone. But here we have a whole word. It's not just a vayidaber. He spoke. Here, koshos. Vayidaber itam koshos. It's a whole expression.
Maybe it was koshos then colon. Who are you? Where are you from? It's like a cross-examination.
Yeah. You want to say that it's referring to the future, Al Shem Ha'asad. Everything that we're going to read in the future in the parasha is all nichlal when it says kashas. Okay, that's a possible. That might be an answer.
Who are you? What's your family? And so on. Those questions.
Okay, that's a possible answer. I am Panim Latara, but I don't know. I feel there's something more. The fact that it says it's an independent statement. Vayedaber itam kashas. Period. And now a new conversation. Vayomer lohem me'ayin basem. Next statement. Meraglim atem. Ervas Aretz Basim Liros. These are independent. It's in Hanani, but every word in the Torah has richness, has depth. It appears there's something more. And the other question of where do we find? Do you ever said to them, where is your father? That we don't find. We're trying to connect the dots. Okay, let's just go to.
That word kashos means a tough question. Who is your father? You know.
But why then does it say Vayomer Alein? He repeats the whole.
Those questions, your father and your brother,
yeah.
That's a tough question for them to answer. Because they would have to.
Uncomfortable. It made them uncomfortable to reveal.
Those questions would be uncomfortable.
He made them uncomfortable. It would normally be a simple question. But in their situation, you made us very uncomfortable. He was confessing his guilt. Yehudi, he was single years. Avol Hashemim Anachnu, Alachinu. So you made us very uncomfortable. You obviously knew about it. In fact, a lot of the Mepharshim say that we asked the question last week. Didn't the brothers realize that this person was Yosef? There were so many signs, Simonim. So some of the Mepharshim learn that they really thought that this was the master of Yosef. Yosef was sold as a slave. It must have been that Yosef revealed all these secrets to this person, and Yosef was such a good slave, he wanted more. He wanted another slave. So they revealed that he was on to them. Let's go into two more very short things. Yaakov Avinu finally comes down and he comes before Paro. Yosef presents Yaakov Avinu to Paro. Paro asks Yaakov, Kama Yimei Shnei Chayecha, how old are you? Yaakov says, I'm 130 years. Ne'at Ziroim. Hayu Yimei Shnei Chayecha Lo Yisigu. They did not reach the goodness of my forefathers of Yitzchak and of Avraham Avinu. Okay, so I saw in Rabbi one of my friend's books, friend of the Parsha, one of the books, he told Sue a very interesting story. And there's not much of a, I'm not telling any chidush, maybe just an interesting story. He connects to this pasuk. There was a person, it seems like a true story, he went to a community and he went to visit the cemetery and he read the tombstones. And he noticed on the tombstones, he was shocked. It said the age of all the people. This one was 12 years old, 10 years old, 15 years old, 20 years old, wow, 25 years old, 3 years old. What kind of crazy place is this? Everyone here dies young. Everyone here dies when they're a teenager. They die 20, 30. What's going on here? He thought this is a place, there's a magefa, there's some illness. All the tombstones in the whole cemetery are like this. He goes into the city, he looks around, he goes to shul, goes here, goes there, and he sees everyone there. They live regular lives, no different than anyone else, any other community. People live full lives, 70, 80, 90, whatever. There are some young people, whatever it is. So yes, what's going on here? Everyone here, so let me explain to you. Here the custom is, before a person dies, this is where I understand the story, people or the family, they would evaluate their life. They would make a cheshvan hanefesh. How many years, how much time of their life was productive? They felt they accomplished something. And how much of their life do they feel was just wasted? Just go with the wind, weeds growing in the field, nothing significant, no accomplishments. And people would put on their matzeva, they would instruct to put on their matzeva the number of years they felt they were productive in this world. So therefore, some people felt for 10 of the 10, they lived to the age of 90, 10 years. I can show that 10 years I accomplished. 15 years, 20 years. That's the custom of this community. So Rav Freni just points out, that's really what Yaakov Avinu was saying. I'm physically 130 years old. But if you want to really know how old I am, my real age, what I'm going to write on my matzeva, ne'at. Ne'at v'ro'im. I'll put on my matzeva, I was 20 years old, 15 years old, because the sach hakol, I wasted so much time, Yaakov Avinu, I mean, chashom is this, Yaakov Avinu, but the idea of the story is true, we all can relate to this, is that unfortunately, we go with the wind, we don't appreciate the value of time, how much value time is. Now, on that note, the value of time, I saw something from Rabbi Shur, Avraham Shur Sefer, Lekach V'Aliva, something very, very, very interesting idea. When Yosef was reunited with Yosef, I'm sorry, when Yosef was reunited with Binyamin, they both cried. Vayipol al tzavarei Binyamin vayefk olav. The Binyamin bocha al tzavarav. Rashi tells, what were they crying about? So Yosef was crying over the two batei mikdashos that would be built in the portion of Binyamin that would be destroyed. The Bayis Rishon Bayis Sheni was built in Chelek of Binyamin, and Binyamin cried on the neck of Yosef to refer to, he was crying over the Churban of Mishkan Shiloh. Mishkan Shiloh stood for 369 years and was then destroyed, and that was built in the Chelek of Yosef. And then there was 57 years? Was that it? 57 years of Novi Givon. There was two Mishkanos of Novi, which were really, they were not full-fledged Mishkanos, until the building of the Bayis Rishon by Shlomo, and that was the Bayis Rishon. So Rabbi Shoyas, and not only Rabbi Shoyas, everyone has to question, why was Binyamin crying over the loss of Mishkan Shiloh? Mishkan Shiloh was never meant to be permanent. Kiloi basem arata el ha-menucha v'el ha-nachla. Menucha zu Shiloh, nachla is the base ha-migdash. So Shiloh was never meant to last forever. Shiloh was only part of the process of all the various things. The Mishkan was in the Midbar, was in Gilgal, was in Shiloh, Novi Givon, then the Bayis Rishon, the Bayis Sheni, the Bayis Shlishi. What's there to cry about? Why is he crying about the Korban of Shiloh? 57 years later, there will be the Bayis Beis HaMikdash. So one answer he gives, I'm sure, is Shiloh was not meant to be destroyed. Shiloh was meant to be a seamless transition to go from Shiloh directly into the Bayis Rishon. Had it not been destroyed, now he doesn't say this, I'm adding this into what he says, but I think what he means to say there is, there was a very great mile in Mishkan Shiloh of you were able to eat Kodshei Kalim B'chol Haroyeh. Based in Yerushalayim, you only can eat Kodshim Kalim in Yerushalayim if you're in the walls of the city. And even Kodshei Kodshim, you only can eat if you're in the walls of the Azar. But Kodshim Kalim in the wall. In Shiloh, you did not have to be in the walls of Shiloh, in whatever the community. Even you can eat Kodshei Kalim as long as you can see from the distance. If you were 100 miles away and you can see the Mishkan Shiloh, you were allowed to eat Kodshei Kalim. This was a tremendous smila. And this was symbolic of an incredible and a very intense Kedusha that Shiloh had, allowing a person to connect to the Mishkan, even at a great distance, just by seeing it. It's possible, I'm not sure he's saying this, but I think what he means to say is that if Shiloh was not destroyed, if there would have been a seamless transition between Shiloh and the Beis HaMikdash, that Kiddush of Shiloh would have been transferred to the Beis HaMikdash, and we would be able to eat Kodshei Kalim B'chol HaRoyeh. Unbelievable. You're in America, and you go online, and you can see the Beis HaMikdash, you can see the Kosel, you can eat Kashim Kalim. What am I looking at? Obviously, I'm joking a little bit, but the idea is there. You can see B'chol HaRoyeh. They would have all these shilas today. Can you use it good enough? Some will say yes, some will say no. There'll be big fights about it. What to argue about? B'chol HaRoyeh. This was a very great Chorban. The loss that this Mila was not transferred. There had to be a Chorban, and we had to start new and to build a new Beis HaMikdash. And when you start new, you can't replicate the old. You couldn't just transfer. What a Chorban. That Mila of B'chol HaRoyeh, that Kedusha, is lost forever. And that's something that's worth crying about. That's one answer. The other answer he gives, which is a very powerful answer, is time was lost. Why are they crying now about the Beis HaMikdash? Very strange. Here they are, they haven't seen each other for 22 years. All of a sudden, they're crying about the Beis HaMikdash, about Shiloh. My Inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai. What's going on? The answer is, why are they crying about each other? Pshat! They haven't seen each other for 22 years, they're crying. Lost time. Look at 22 years can never be making up. We didn't see each other for 22 years. There's nothing we can do now for the rest of our lives that can make up for the lost time. Our adolescence, our youth, we can't make it up. It's impossible to make up. That's personal. But let's channel this mourning over the loss of time to other losses of time. There was 57 years in Jewish history that were lost. Shiloh was not meant to be destroyed at this time. Shiloh was meant to go all the way until the time of the Bayis Rishon. The Bayis Rishon was meant to build a certain time period, and Shiloh was meant to go all the way until that time period. And they would just transfer the kelim from Shiloh to the Beis HaMikdash. What happened? Shiloh was choraf. The Shechina was nostalgic. It departed to some degree. There was nothing. We had to rebuild a new Beis, and even if not like the first pshat, that the full glory returned to the Beis HaMikdash, and let us suggest even a greater kedusha came to the Beis HaMikdash, even more. But the bottom line is there was 57 years of nothing, and that can never be made up for. The history, the Jewish people are different today because we're missing those 57 years. Just like Binyamin and Yosef can never have a relationship for the rest of their lives because they were missing 22 years in their life, Klal Yisrael today, we don't appreciate this, Klal Yisrael today, in 2015, okay, we changed the calendar, we're coming soon, like 2014, only a few more days, we're in the holiday season now, we're coming soon to 2015, okay, limit spot on, I know, I don't want to offend anyone, limit spot on, Tov Shin Ayin Hey Alafim, is different today because of that lost time. And that's something that we really don't appreciate. We don't understand. But that's what Rashi is telling us.
But we were in
Givon. What? Noi v'Givon is not the same. Noi v'Givon were Boma Ketana, was minor relative to the Kedusha of Shiloh, was Mamish of Beis HaMikdash. Noi v'Givon was a trailer. Okay, it wasn't the real thing. It wasn't the real deal. And now also we can appreciate, once we understand why he cried of Shiloh, now we really have a much greater appreciation of why Yosef was crying for Binyamin. The Chorban, the Beis HaMikdash. What's the Chorban, the Beis HaMikdash? Well, it was Choraf. It's the lost time. When Mashiach will come, we'll have a Bayis Shlishi. But the Bayis Shlishi is not the same. You can never really make up for the 2,000 years. It's not 2,000 years, 1,900 and change. You can't make up for the lost time. It's not, okay, so we'll have it today, we'll have it tomorrow. We don't appreciate what we're missing, because even when we're going to have it, we'll be repaired. You can never really catch up. Okay, one last part to conclude. This is a very good question. This is a tough question. Mr. Rappaport, you're going to like this.
How this is the.
existence?
369 years. It was meant to go for another 57. It was half prematurely. Last question. This is a tough, tough question. Eyes in the kasha. Yosef gives his brothers very strict instructions what to tell his father. He tells them, you'll see here all of my honor. All of my honor, Imperial Yosef, kind of mission. Of a young Imperial Yosef, I'm going to go back to one notion where it's saying, I'll go back to Psukim. Okay, here it is. He says to his brothers, Vihine, Einechem, Reois, Veine, Achi, Vinyamin, Kifi, Hamdaber, Alechem, Vuchulu, Vuchulu. Okay, I'm looking for the instructions. The instructions. Give me one second. Here it is. Okay. Okay. You have. What have you seen? Now. Three things. An av, an adon, and a moshel. I'm a moshel b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. Naharu valu elavi. But listen. When you go to my father, don't tell him I'm a moshel. I want you to tell him instead, I don't want you to tell him the truth. Pella. Is that a Pella? You see here, I'm an Av L'Paro, I'm an Odom L'Chol Beso, I'm a Moshel, the Chol Eretz Mitzrayim. But, Maharu, V'alu El Aviv, V'amartim Elov, Koma B'Nicho Yosef, Samani L'Kim L'Odon. L'chol Mitzrayim. Don't tell him the truth. What's the chilik between an Adon and a Moshel? A Moshel is a dictator. He rules against your will. An Adon is a person who has been elected. He rules with the will of the people. He's ruled. An Adon, people have accepted me, have recognized I'm a master over them, and they have elected me. They have given me power to rule. Don't tell my father I'm a Moshel because he's not going to like that. He doesn't like to hear that I control people against their will. He'll like hearing that I'm an Adon, that people like me, and they have elected me to a position of government. Redoilai al Talmud. The brothers go. So what are the brothers supposed to say? That he owed Yosef Chai, and want to see that he's an Adon. And what does they tell him? Vayagidu lo od Yosef Chai v'chihu Moshel v'chol eretz Mitzrayim. They didn't follow the rules. The first thing you ever teach in college, first thing you teach students is follow the instructions. Follow the instructions. Right? Did you follow? They didn't follow the instructions. Good question. It's Mamish Apella. That's exactly why Yosef was on the mark. Yosef knew if you don't say the right words, you're not going to believe it. Yosef, my Yosef is a Moshel. Is a Moshel. Not an Adon. Okay, I'm just going very quickly out of time. So that's why Yosef was way ahead of his brothers. He knew they're not going to listen. They're not going to follow instructions. They're going to say what they want to say. Backup plan. What's my backup plan? I'm going to send the Agolos. Why the Agolos? There's something very strange about the Agolos. The Gold Parsha Shoiftim, it says that when the Kohanim come to confess, all of a sudden the Torah says, who are the Kohanim? They are the people whom Hashem has chosen. They have not come to this position on their own. They have been selected. They have not taken the position for themselves. In the parsha of the Agolos, the Torah emphasizes that the Kohanim serve by the grace of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They don't serve because they put themselves in this position. It's not just a free-for-all. The chap, the survival of the fittest. Ki bom bochar Hashem mikol. I have time. You look at the pasuk there, and in Parsha Kashoftim, they have been selected. It's through the grace of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they are in this position of leadership in order to do the service. It does not say this anywhere else. All the mitzvot, you have Kohanim, of course, the Kohanim have been chosen by Kodesh Baruch Hu. Why suddenly, but whatever the reason is, by the parish of Egla Rufa, they're the people who do the Egla Rufa have to be selected. They don't come forward on their own. Therefore, now when Yaakov Avinu saw the Agolos, and now he knew the remes, that Yaakov Avinu, that's one of the halacha, that's one of the concepts of Egla Rufa, that he's not really a Moshel. He has not risen to leadership by brute force. He's there because Hashem put him there. He's there because of his chayim, because he's been selected. There was a selection. Oh, Vayechi Ruach Yaakov Aviyam. The only reason Vayofa Glivo, this is Jewish, is because they didn't follow the instructions. They were told to say Adon, they said Moshal. When he saw the Agolos, which captures the concept that leaders don't rule on their own, leaders rule because they are selected, then Yaakov Avinu recognized the message in the message from Yosef, and he had Nechama, and his life came back to him. Have a wonderful Shabbat.